Wisp Sports Radio, the voice of women in sport.
Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks. This is season 2, episode 15. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with Wisp Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center. In this podcast, I am going to talk to three advocates, scholars, and colleagues about disruptions in women's sport. They are also disruptors and D-I-S-R-U-P-T-H-E-R-S themselves. I want to welcome back Dr. Nancy Lowe from season 1, episode 5. Welcome, Dr. Lowe.
Thank you, Dr. Lavoie. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you back. So if you didn't catch season 1, episode 5, where Dr. Lowe and I talked about the business of women's sport, please return to that much listened to episode. Second on the queue, we have another returning guest from last week's, 2 weeks ago episode, with season 2, episode 14, Dr. Ann Peguerrero. She and I talked about disruptions and sort of launched this series. And Dr. Peguerrero came up with the hashtag disruptors. So we want to give proper credit to that. So welcome back, Dr. Peguerrero.
Good to be back.
Okay. And we have a new guest to Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Katie LaBelle. And she is also a colleague of ours, who we have been working with together probably for the last 6 months about disruptions in women's sport to the current male model of sport, which began with some collaborative work together. So welcome, Dr. LaBelle.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So for our listeners out there, we, instead of going through everybody's very illustrious biographies and all the great work that you've done, you're going to give our listeners a one sentence tagline of yourself. So we're going to start with Dr. Lowe.
So right now I'm just working with a group to create the Sport Innovation and Research Initiative and soon to be Institute at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And I'm actively working on behalf of the Sport Marketing Association as the president. So please tune in because we have a special event tomorrow on the black market, which is the black consumer, sport consumer, special with Brendan Brown from NYU University.
Excellent. And one of the great things about Tucker Center Talks is I get to collaborate and work with and talk to women scholars around the globe that care very deeply and passionately about women in sport. So that's a perfect example. All right. Dr. Peguerrero, you're up. Give us your tagline.
I think I got to go with I'm a disruptor.
Absolutely.
So I'm a disruptor because I think that's been my approach to my career. I've taken a different way to look at research and having impact with it. So started really early looking at social media and just sort of branched into it. Key fun things that are happening for me is starting a new job at the Lang School of Business and Economics in a couple of weeks as the Lang Chair in Sport Management, and super excited to be launching a national research network for gender equity in sport in Canada with some funding from Sport Canada. So some good times ahead, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic and there's a few bright spots for me.
Great. Yes, we're very excited about your new research initiative for gender equity in Canada. And we will use this podcast to highlight a lot of the good work that you all are doing to the north, to my colleagues to the north. All right, Dr. LaBelle, you're up. Give us your tagline.
Okay, so I would also like to consider myself a disruptor here formally, since that's the spirit of the episode. But my research agenda is really grounded in gender equity and investigating the evolution of sport business, really, in the digital era. I'm also a founding scholar for this gender equity research hub in Canada. I'm a former NCAA Division I athlete and the mom to a really sporty little girl. So I've got a little bit of added incentive to really to make my work matter and make a difference here.
Yes, and I think all of us agree, because I know we've talked about this together off air, is that we want to do this work to leave women's sport better than we found it. And when we retire, we need to pass the torch. And that's what this work is about. So we're going to answer two key questions today. First, we're going to talk about why we think from our scholarly perspectives that the WNBA and other women's leagues have really led the way on the return to play, and why the women's bubbles, and I'm doing air quotes, although you can't see me, you can imagine I'm doing air quotes, why the women's bubbles have been more successful than the men's in terms of the pro leagues. And then next, we're going to talk about, from our own opinions, what has been the biggest disruptions in women's sport currently as of August 10th, 2020. So let's start with the first question. Why do you think the WNBA has really led the way to return to play during this pandemic and been more successful than men's leagues? Who wants to kick that off first?
I'll kick it off.
Okay, so, Dr. Peguero, take it away.
I think we've seen two women's leagues, the NWSL and the WNBA, come back very successfully. Limited positive tests, a successful conclusion for the NWSL, and a really amazing fiery start for the WNBA. Why do I think that's happening? I think that these women have something more to play for. I think that they are playing for not just paychecks, even though the WNBA's pay has gone up this year. I think they're playing to keep their the leagues alive, and that this means more to them. I think they've both put some added incentives with their social justice movements, but I also just think that they've taken the approach to this matters to them, and so they are complying with the procedures and the policies, and they're making it a success. There's less chance for women if they fail to come back as the league. So I think that's pushing them.
Interesting. Okay. So there's one perspective that it might matter more to them. Not that it doesn't matter to the men, but it matters perhaps differently to the women than it does to the professional male athletes. Dr. LaBelle, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's always a smaller margin for error in women's sport too. And that any mistakes that they would have made would have been dramatically magnified, more so than some of the mistakes that we maybe are seeing in the MLB even. I also think that women are used to doing more with less, and that they maybe have a little bit more experience just adapting to these kinds of environments. So yeah, I think that there's that added incentive and less room to make a mistake.
Interesting. Dr. Lowe, what do you think about this?
Well, I actually took a little bit different perspective, which I agree with both of my colleagues, but we did a study that looked at the impact on health of sport participation. And one of the things that we found is that women tend to be more educated as athletes. So our WNBA counterparts are more educated than our NBA athletes, and our NWSL athletes are more educated than our MLS candidate or athletes. And so in essence, what I'm suggesting is the fact that being more highly educated equates with having healthier behaviors, which we've shown through the research. And healthier behaviors leads to lower chronic diseases. It leads to a different perspective when it comes to things like, say, COVID-19, right? That they're aware that it's not just their own health, but also the health of those that they are around and that of those who they impact. So take into consideration that some of these WNBA players have their own children with them in the bubble. So, you know, their health is not just their own health that's at risk if they get infected, but also the health of those they care for most directly, as well as the health of their teams and their league, you know, big picture.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point to bring up in terms of the education level. Thanks for sharing that data. A response to that? From the other two,
I think it's a good add to it for sure. I do think if you look at these women, they're mostly all college graduates, right? So they do have that education. I think along the research side, not research I've done, but there has been research that showed that women in business sense take less riskier behavior decisions, right? So we've seen that if you have a board that has better gender equity, your company performs better. We saw that when Iceland's economy tanked and they replaced their men dominated government with females, they rebounded because they take less riskier chances. So I do think that's another factor if we're going to bring in some data to go along with what Dr. Nancy said, is that, you know, we're seeing that women also have less risky behavior.
Less risky behavior. And I think we're seeing women's leadership in general shine during COVID is another big part of this too. So we've got some great examples around the world of countries that are led by women doing better in their response. So I think that could be a part of it too.
We all want to move to New Zealand. Right?
They don't want us. You cannot come. Please stay where you are. But it's interesting because the NWSL and the WNBA both have female leadership, and maybe there's something to that. But how can we tease that out a little bit more based on what we know? Dr. Ann, you were telling us a little bit about corporate data and boards and diversity, gender diversity balance in the workforce and how that leads to better decision making. How can we think about this a little bit together about women's leadership and why that might matter? I mean, we don't know for sure, but it's kind of, we wouldn't say coincidental if, you know, you have an N of two leagues and two women leaders and they're doing really well in return to play. What does that tell us?
I think I'd like to think that women have a broader perspective when they look at making decisions. And maybe that's because they have more experiences across their sort of lifespan. So I think that they're used to caring about others than just themselves. They're used to having to justify decisions and use, data to back up when we make decisions in rooms. We always have to seem to come with more than the men do. And I think that those types of experiences lead you to make probably a better, well-rounded, data-informed set of decisions and putting policies in place. And we see the opposite a lot of times happen with the same sort of data around a very uniform male environment, falling into groupthink and not really necessarily taking the, you know, sort of 360 look at problems. So that would be my quick take on it.
Any other thoughts before we move on to our current disruptions in the sport world?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting when you think about the power dynamics, right, of women's sport versus men's sport, they definitely are concerned on the men's side about revenue that's coming from the loss of ticket sales, the loss of attendance, the loss of sponsorship, all of that on a scale that's profoundly different than what it is for women's sport, right? So there's no question that women's sport, the model that has been sustaining all sport to this point, has been highly dictated by ticket sales, sponsorship, media rights, etc. And in order for women's sport to be successful, we've had to figure out ways to diversify those revenue streams and to not be as deeply in debt really to those that are perhaps making those riskier decisions with regard to health that perhaps those in the NFL and MLB are willing to make or considering making because of the impact it will have on their revenue streams, right? So in some ways it's benefited women's sport to that degree, but in other ways, I think the women's leadership, as you mentioned, is taking a more holistic view of it, as often we have had to do, simply because the model for women's sport really needs to be different than the model for what has sustained those top mainstream properties in men's sport.
Great, and I think that leads us into talking about some other disruptors. I mean, we were just, before we went on air here, we were saying how the Big Ten just canceled fall sports. They're leading the way. And what's interesting to me about that is that the Big Ten, in terms of the Power Five, have the highest percentage of women head coaches for women's sport. And perhaps that's a different kind of leadership. Now they don't have a female commissioner, but they do have an African-American male in charge that perhaps has a different perspective about health and well-being and this current state of sport, if you will. So let's talk about our current disruptions of the week. And Dr. LaBelle, why don't you start?
What do you got? So I recently moved into a retail department. So there are a lot of really cool disruptive things that we're seeing around clothing right now in women's sport. And on the heels of the orange hoodie phenomenon, which I tuned in and heard your episode from last week, talking about the success. I mean, still this week, the orange hoodie from the WNBA is the number one selling item on Fanatics. So I think that we're starting to see this can be a really successful strategy. But this week, we've got Sue Bird coming in, and she posted a photo of herself and her teammates with a t-shirt that read "Vote Warnock." And so they're using clothing to not only be disruptive, but to really get some attention and to get some media visibility and just be, I think, a part of a larger societal dialogue. So I'll say, normally for me, when you hear stories that kind of breach the borders of traditional sport news, you know something's really caught on. So I was on my elliptical last Friday and listening to my favorite political news podcast, and their lead story was this story. So this is, I mean, that people were talking about this in a lot of unique spaces, and it really gained a lot of traction that way.
For those who don't know what "Vote Warnock" means, just fill in the crack there. So we can't assume all our listeners, even from around the globe, know what we're talking about. So why is this 100. Important?
Yeah, so Kelly Loeffler is a current co-owner of the WNBA's Atlanta Dream. She's also a Georgia State Senator. And so as the WNBA was kicking off their season a couple of weeks ago, Loeffler wrote a letter to the WNBA commissioner. And it's in her words, again, I'm using the air quotes, she adamantly opposed the Black Lives Matter movement. And she suggested that instead of wearing the players wearing jerseys with Breonna Taylor's name, the players actually put an American flag on their jerseys, which again, in her words, was an important symbol that she thought would unite the work to be better, brighter, and more equitable. So, and actually more recently, she put out a tweet that demanded WNBA players also stand for the national anthem. So essentially, she's misconstruing some of the Black Lives Matter movement. But basically her political views are really just against just about everything that the WNBA stands for in a lot of ways. And she happens to be running for re-election in November. So this Vote Warnock shirt is the attempt by the WNBA really to take a stand. And they posted the picture with a quote from John Lewis that read, "Ordinary people with extraordinary vision can redeem the soul of America by getting into good trouble." And so it was really an announcement that they will be fighting for elected leaders that believe in and share the values that they have as players. And Raphael Warnock is Loeffler's Democratic opponent for that November election. So initially it was just these pictures and the images that they were sharing as influencers. I saw over the weekend, the Warnock campaign has actually jumped on this. They're now selling the t-shirts for $25 a piece to help support the campaign. And it's grown from there too over the weekend. Sue actually had a new picture with a t-shirt that said, "Arrest the cops who killed Breonna Taylor." With all the proceeds from that t-shirt going to the Breonna Taylor Foundation. I think Candace Parker, there was an image of her where she had a shirt that said, "A woman's place is in the House and the Senate." So this is a real movement. It's gaining traction. It's starting to get a lot of attention, like I said. And I think it's showing us more proof that the women athletes can be their own media empires and that maybe doing good for the world can also be good for athlete brands.
Yeah, there's so much happening in this Say Her Name campaign with the WNBA and the different ways they're using shoes and t-shirts and activism and the opportunity where they're all together in the bubble to really come together to create space and show that they have power in the system and they're using it. I love that one. When you said the woman's place is in the, what was it? Katie?
The House and the Senate.
The House and the Senate. When I was coaching out, when I was at Wellesley, they had a shirt that says a woman's best role is a secretary on the front. And on the back, it said Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright and Hillary Clinton, who are both alums of a Wellesley Wellesley love alum. It. So I always loved that shirt. Reminded me of that. I wish I would have bought it. I didn't at the time, and now I wish I had it. So, okay, Dr. Peguero, what do you have for the disruption of the week?
Well, first, I just think that I want to turn 2020 into a whole new wardrobe, and I just want to wear those types of shirts. I think we should all just like, you know, I like this retail for social justice movement a lot. So,
plus, we're all on Zoom, so we can show them off to each other.
Exactly.
You know, as an activist signatory of wearing the shirt.
There you go. So I'll follow Katie and take the other half of that power. Women athlete duo and pick Megan Rapinoe this week for my disruptor. And why for me is that while I didn't get to see the show because it's on HBO and it hasn't streamed here, she did a show on HBO. So we've got her now having and leading conversations about America with leading politicians and activists. And this move for her to take sport as from her platform and move it even further into weaving it into the society and maybe the fabric of America, I think that we're just beginning to see the tip of her disruption overall, and it's going to transcend sport. So for me, she's disrupted sport, and she will continue to have that disruption in there, but now she's actually moving that, you know, and taking it into everyday America, and I think that's going to have a real big impact. So she's my disruptor of the week.
Okay, we've got the lesbian power couple of disruptors on the table. All right.
Let's get them on as guests, maybe. Let's get them
okay,
on.
Okay, well, I'll work on that. I'm sure we're not the only people asking them to be on podcasts. I'm sure we'd have to get through about 10 layers of agents to get to them. But I'll put that on my list for Tucker Center Talks, Season 2, Episode 16. Stay tuned. All right, Dr. Lowe, what do you have for a disruptor this week?
Well, I'm just going to stay in on the path here. So we started with Sue, we went to Megan. So I do have to throw in that this ad campaign that Symetra is doing with the two of them, right? So we have our first sponsorship of a lesbian couple in which we see an ad campaign of them together in COVID and then individually doing things on their own in COVID. And of course, from a sponsorship lens, I love the idea that a company like Symetra is getting involved with a lesbian couple, right? That is a social justice statement right there about the values of that company that is definitely cutting edge and definitely an example of disruption and two women disrupting what has been the status quo as far as what does sponsorship look like, what do those opportunities look like. And so I think that's an interesting one. But I also want to throw in that, because they don't get a lot of attention, it seems, within our realm, which is the LPGA. So the LPGA this weekend, their viewership numbers for the beginning of their marathon tournament were you know, up there setting new records, which is something that I think is interesting because it follows in line with first the NWSL and the viewership records that they set at the beginning of their season and with their championship as well, followed by the WNBA and their viewership numbers, which are just incredibly impressive. They keep announcing new media contracts. I think I saw one today with Twitter that they're going to extend more games onto Twitter. And then we see that being followed with the LPGA this weekend and a phenomenal finish to their tournament as well that got a lot of people really excited about women's golf. And that was in the context of the PGA Championship happening too. You know, so I think what's really fascinating and exciting for those of us who are advocates of women's sport is that this isn't just happening in a space where there is no competition. I think perhaps in the beginning, we might have said, well, the NWSL is the first sport back. So, of course, everybody's, you know, tuning in. That's the first opportunity. But now we have the NHL, MLB, NBA, everything is back, so to speak. And women's sport is still really disrupting the model again. And we're seeing something really new and exciting. So that's my addition for the week.
Okay. So my disruptor... This is so good. All these different avenues. And for people that are listening to this, we do want to invite you to think about what would you pick? What would be your disruption in women's sport or in the dominant model of men's sport? There's a lot of disruption. So what, you know, if you were a guest on this podcast, what would you pick? And you can tweet us at Tucker Center, at With Sports, at Dr. Sports Psych, or any one of our, tell the listeners your Twitter handles.
Mine's at Kate LaBelle.
Okay.
Sport Management Prof. Not all spelled correctly.
MGMT Prof, right?
Yeah.
Sport Management Prof. Dr. Lowe?
At DR underscore NLO.
Okay, Dr. Enlo. Okay, so you can tweet us your disruptions. Mine, I'm going to go in a little bit different direction. A colleague of ours, not doctor. I always think of her as a doctor. She's a lawyer, but she should have a PhD. We're giving her an honorary PhD right here on Tucker Center Talks. Nancy Hogshead Makar. She's a longtime advocate and champion of women's sports. She has her own company called Champion Women, and she worked with the California Women's Law Center to develop a website called TitleIX Schools.com, in which they hold decision makers and institutions accountable for discriminating against women's sport in terms of resources. And some of the stats they have on their website, what they did is they went to the EADA, the Equity and Diversity. I always get that wrong. What does EADA stand for? I should know that off the top of my head. Equity and Diversity.
I know it's Disclosure Act.
Disclosure Act, that's right. Yeah. So yeah. I always just say EADA and assume everybody knows what I'm talking about. Equity in Athletics Disclosure Act. And on there is data around budgets and salaries and recruitment and participation statistics for institutions. And what Nancy did with colleagues is looked at that data and put it into a publicly accessible website, because the EADA website is kind of a disaster and you really have to know what you're doing to get the data you want. But she calculated that women miss out on $1 billion in athletic scholarships annually. So male college athletes in the US get $1 billion more of scholarship money than women. And it's stats like that that hold decision makers accountable, that put the data, that let the data tell the story. And this website is about data, and that's disrupting because you can't argue with the data. It's a fact. And I'm going to keep saying this on this podcast, is that science matters, data matters. And so that is my disruptor for the week. So if you haven't checked it out, go on TitleIX Schools.com. and get involved. Look up your school and see how they're doing. It's a little bit similar to our Women in College Coaching Report Card, where we give schools and conferences and sports grades to hold the decision makers accountable for how they hire, recruit, and retain women. This is about giving resources and allocating money to women's sport versus men's sport. So that's my disruptor front and center. So any other comments as we wrap up, as we want to throw out any other disruptors in the space that we just thought of?
Yeah, I actually had kind of a cool, just right before we got on this call, I was looking at Twitter and I saw that Brene Brown actually had tweeted about the at WNBA's movement to say her name, and the Breonna Taylor campaign in particular, to draw attention to that issue that continues to just kind of linger out there. So it seems as though people are pushing for some action on the Breonna Taylor case. And I think most people on this podcast probably know who Brene Brown is, but she's probably one of the most high profile scholars within just like kind of public media. And so to see her tweet about that, I thought, well, okay, all we need now is Oprah Winfrey. So I tweeted that. And within seconds, I had a reply from Brene saying, have you seen the cover of Oprah's most recent magazine? So I think what we're actually seeing is some extension of the message and some visibility on a profile that's far greater, even the women's sport, finally starting to happen. So when some of these big name people and big name celebrities start joining in and lending their visibility to the cause, I think we're really going to see even greater disruption, but still being led by by the athletes, as we've mentioned here, who are really, really making this social justice issue something of their brand and something of their message, and something that hopefully is going to continue to create change.
Great.
I think historically too, if you couch it and think about how far we've come. I mean, it used to be, you think about Michael Jordan and some of the other athletes who used to stay away from these social justice issues. How the world has changed, and how the women's athletes in particular right now are really using their platform to change the model and disrupt this space and use their platforms to get some of these really important issues some attention and visibility. I think it's pretty neat to just kind of look at that transformation over time.
Yeah, and I think one thing about the women though in the space is that we've always had women, Billie Jean King, you know, Martina Navratilova, out lesbian women in the space who wanted to do activism but that were punished. So I think we also want to recognize that we have had female activists, but now it's almost becoming cachet and avant-garde to be an athlete activist, and that sponsors are rewarding that instead of shying away from it. Dr. Peguero, sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, I was going to almost say the same thing. To me, I think, you know, we've seen women risk a lot to do this in the past. And I still think they're risking now because there is still the chance for these women who, you know, don't make the money that male athletes make. They're risking more than the men who are kneeling in the NBA and putting up the social justice. And the more they risk and the more that they're committed to it, that's why we're seeing the Brené Browns, Oprah Winfrey, who I think also put billboards up all around Louisville with Breonna Taylor on it. So we're seeing them bring bigger media attention to it, and they're not giving up. I think I love the fact that they start press conferences either wearing the shirts or saying it's been so many days since, you know, Breonna Taylor has been murdered and they haven't arrested the cops. And so they stay on message, and that I think I really admire them for, even when they're being asked and they've just had an amazing career game, they're staying on message. So I think that's important to recognize, but also that they're still risking something by doing, even though it's cachet and avant-garde, they're still risking more than I think, you know, men athletes when they join these movements.
Yeah. It's not just a one press conference and it's a nice talking point, a nice headline. It's a season long sustained effort with a on-point message. And I think as the season continues to unfold, it will be really interesting to keep abreast of that. So I want to plug our survey. This is a survey the four of us are doing together that started with us brainstorming about how we could get data around thought leaders and academics in the sport industry. We want to know your thoughts about what was working well for women's sport prior to the pandemic, and what would you change? What would you disrupt? So if you'd like to take part in the survey, it literally will only at tops take you 5 minutes, probably less. And we want to know what you think. So go on. You can find the survey on any of our social media, on Tucker Center, at Tucker Center, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find the link to the survey. Take it, share it with your sport-minded colleagues, because we'd love to hear about you. So thank you so much to my three colleagues, my disruptors. And you can also join us by using that hashtag on your own social media when you see disruptions. Disruptors, use the hashtag. So as we conclude this episode of Tucker Center Talks, again, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet us. Check out our website at tuckercenter.org. Follow us on Facebook or Instagram. You can find the show notes with links and resources for this episode at wisports.com. Look for the Tucker Center Talks in the Listen tab, where you'll also find more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thank you for listening and helping us turn up the volume on women's sport. That's a wrap for episode 14 of season 2 of Tucker Center Talks. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport.